just go with it? Okay. Hello, Texas, America, and the world. This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. At 8 o'clock this morning, Central Standard Time, 1 hour from now, we'll be joined by Gary Brummett, who is a survivor of the June 8, 1967 attack by Israel on the USS Liberty. Gary Brummett will be on to discuss the specifics of what he saw and experienced that day, as well as what has transpired in his life and in the lives of some of the other survivors in the last 40 years. And he will be on, of course, as well to discuss his political analysis of why this whole situation has been systematically obscured and kept from the American public in regard to the truth of the issue for these last four decades. That will be Gary Brummett on at 8 o'clock Central Standard Time in regard to discussing the assault on the USS Liberty. There are a number of interesting stories that one can find on Google in regard to this that go back quite a number of years. Eric Margolis has a May 2001 piece that you can find online through a search on Google. That will pop up as a May 2001 piece for LouRockwell.com. The Washington Report on Middle Eastern Affairs has a 1993 post on this event entitled The Assault on the USS Liberty, Still Covered Up After 26 Years. That article for the Washington Review of Middle Eastern Affairs is written by another survivor of the USS Liberty attack, and again goes back to a period of time 14 years ago. But the basic data in that article is certainly applicable to our conversation in 1 hour, with Gary Brummett. And I hope you will stay tuned for that particular interaction as we try to get at the bottom of what exactly did happen almost 40 years ago on June the 8th, 1967. You know, it's fascinating to look at some of the things going on in the American press today, as at least a few thinking people acknowledge that not much has really changed since the whole issue of the Democratic Congress became a reality in the first Tuesday in November, and, of course, officially with the swear-ins in January. Lo and behold, if you turn to aljazeera.info today and look at the letters and announcements to the Al Jazeera editor, you discover a very large picture of Nancy Pelosi. And this picture is posted just above an article by Patrick Buchanan that apparently is receiving quite a bit of play in the Arab world, even as I speak. Buchanan's article is entitled The AIPAC Girl. And Pat goes on to say that if George W. Bush launches a preemptive war on Iran, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi will bear full moral responsibility for that war. For it was Pelosi who quietly agreed to strip out of the $100 billion funding bill for Iraq, a provision that would have required President Bush to seek congressional approval before launching any new war on Iran. Pelosi's capitulation came in the Appropriations Committee. What went down and why? Quote, conservative Democrats as well as lawmakers concerned about the possible impact on Israel had argued for the change in strategy, unquote, wrote the Associated Press David Epso and Matthew Lead. Quote, Representative Shelley Berkley, Democrat of Nevada, said in an interview there is a widespread fear in Israel about Iran, which has expressed unremitting hostility to the Jewish state. It would take away perhaps the most important tool the U.S. has when it comes to Iran, she said of the now-abandoned provision. Quote, I don't think it was a very wise idea to take things off the table if you're trying to get people to modify their behavior and normalize in a civilized way, according to Gary Ackerman of New York. According to John Nichols of The Nation, Pelosi's decision to strip the provision barring Bush from attacking Iran without Congress approval, quote, sends the worst possible signal to the White House, unquote. The speaker has erred dangerously and dramatically, writes Nichols. Her disastrous misstep could haunt her and the Congress for years to come, unquote. Nichols does not exaggerate. If Bush now launches war on Iran, he can credibly say Congress and the Democrats gave him a green light. For Pelosi, by removing a provision saying Bush does not have the authority, de facto concedes he does have the authority. Bush and Cheney need not worry about Congress. They've been flashed the go sign for war in Iran.
The priest calls for Christians to resist unjust war. It is an established historical fact that the Vatican has publicly stated that the Iraqi war is an unjust war. However, it miserably failed to tell its Catholic soldiers that it is a mortal sin to attack Iraq. The Protestant ministers in unison should take the logical step of telling their soldiers that it is a serious offense against God to participate in this unjust war. However, if enough Protestant ministers do not take this logical step, then the lay Catholics and Protestants have a serious obligation to demand of their clergy to take this logical step publicly. Personally, I am doing all that I can to stop the continuation of the murder, carnage, and suffering that is being committed against the innocent people of Iraq in this terrible, unjust war. For additional facts regarding this grave matter, order the lecture by Father John Martinez entitled WW3 Can Still Be Prevented. Just go to www.republicbroadcasting.org and click on our web banner for more information and ordering.
The Idaho Observer is one of the last independent American presses and isn't afraid to print the truth. The Idaho Observer is a monthly 24-page hard copy newspaper in its fifth year of addressing important issues affecting all freedom-loving Americans. If you are concerned about the burgeoning national debt and the Orwellian police state growing up around you, then subscribe to the Idaho Observer. Only $25 for 12 monthly issues. Idaho Observer readers receive vital insight into events as they unfold. Our articles editorially emphasize activism and serve as a networking tool for like-minded individuals determined to make a difference. The Idaho Observer, printing what you need to be fully informed on issues that matter to real Americans. Go to idaho-observer.com or call 208-255-2307. That's 208-255-2307.
Gold, ever climbing, as the dollar continues to spiral into a free fall. How long before it hits rock bottom? Between 1800 and 1913, the value of the dollar was more or less constant. Since the creation of the Federal Reserve in 1913, the value of the dollar has depreciated 97%. Due to global inflationary policies and the continued erosion of the U.S. dollar, gold and silver are still in the early stages of the greatest bull market the world has ever seen. Whether you purchase precious metals to stabilize your portfolio or you're looking for strong growth, gold and silver will provide you with both. Don't you owe it to yourself to do business with Republic Trading Group? Call us today and become a part of the raging bull in gold and silver. 1-800-691-7898. That's 1-800-691-7898. Call now. 1-800-691-7898.
America coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network. At 8 o'clock this morning, Central Standard Time, we'll be joined by Gary Brummett. Gary is a survivor of the June 8, 1967 attack by Israel during the Six-Day War on an American vessel, the USS Liberty. Israel, of course, has always claimed that that attack was a case of mistaken identification. There is plenty of evidence to the contrary, that they knew exactly who they were attacking and why. And that's part of Gary Brummett's story, not simply in terms of what he experienced on June 8, 1967, but what is known about the meaning of the events of that day in the 40 years since. It's a very sordid story, and among other things involves the successful attempts, of Lyndon Johnson and Robert McNamara, among others, to cover up the truth about Israel's direct involvement in an act of war on a ship of the United States Navy, and the events surrounding this silence and this conspiracy to keep the truth obscured from the American public says an awful lot about what continues to be the disproportionate influence and control of the Jewish lobby in American foreign policy, as well as in American domestic policy and culture. This USS Liberty story is seen by many as a Rosetta Stone in the attempt to open the eyes of a much wider American public as to what is presently going on in this country's situation in the Middle East, as well as, again, in domestic policy. Pat Buchanan's piece talking about AIPAC, which is receiving a lot of attention in the Arab world today, quite clearly identifies Nancy Pelosi, the Democrat House Speaker, as a virtual agent of Israel. This is something that I think is entirely legitimate, because you don't have to go back very far in the archives, folks, to discover just in recent weeks that Nancy Pelosi had made a major policy address before the American-Israel Political Action Committee, where she sounded like a virtual cheerleader for the Likudnik government of Israel, and a virtual cheerleader for anything that they might decide to do in the way of a preemptive war with Iran, whether they do it themselves or get the United States to do it as a surrogate force for Israel. Ms. Pelosi's remarks, of course, mirror those of Hillary Clinton and John Edwards and Barack Obama on this same subject, and it begs the question, what is the difference between the Democrat Party and the Republican Party when it comes to the influence of the Jewish lobby in American government and American media and American culture and American foreign policy? Answer, there ain't no difference. Whatever you think of George Wallace one way or the other, he spoke the truth in the late 1960s when he said that between the Democrat Party and the Republican Party, there isn't a dime's bit of difference. That same thing holds true 4 decades later, and we are in the process of discovering that these two sides of a counterfeit coin are in the process of involving the United States in a third world war for interests that need to be reexamined on the part of the larger American public. Is this really what the American public would want if it understood the implications and who's behind it? Is this really a policy that is worth the lives of thousands upon millions of people? Is this an America First foreign policy? Getting back again to what George Washington said in his farewell address, an address that has recently been reprinted by the American Free Press, when you look through what George Washington told the American people at the end of the 18th century, which is arguably still as important today as it was then, it becomes abundantly clear that our foreign policy and our domestic policy and our monetary policy and our fiscal policy have been hijacked. Who's hijacked it? I think you can argue very effectively that the Jewish lobby in this country has effectively hijacked the foreign and domestic policy of the United States in conjunction with their pals in the American media. They've got a lock, stock, and barrel hold on this thing up to this point. We'll see if that continues in the days ahead, as more and more people may figure out through the Internet, through alternative sources of news, that there's a whole other story and a whole other slant on this situation from what you're going to get in the Washington Post and the Washington Times and the New York Times and Fox News and the New Republic and National Review and all of the usual culprits in this situation who try to position themselves on the American spectrum from left to right when, in fact, they have the same handlers and many of the same financial backers and have editors with the same kinds of connections. Getting back again to Pat Buchanan's remarks on AIPAC and Nancy Pelosi's horrific decision to strip the provision from the supplemental spending bill that would have barred President Bush from attacking Iran without Congress approval, John Nichols of The Nation is at this point speaking the truth when he says that that decision of Pelosi and the Democrats who went along with it sends the worst possible signal to the White House. Nichols writes, the Speaker has erred dangerously and dramatically. Her disastrous misstep could haunt her and the Congress for years to come. Buchanan then continues by saying that Nichols does not exaggerate. If Bush now launches war on Iran, he can credibly say Congress and the Democrats gave him a green light. For Pelosi, by removing a provision saying Bush does not have the authority, de facto concedes he does have the authority. Bush and Cheney need now not worry about Congress. They have been flashed the go sign for war on Iran. Pelosi and company thus aborted a bipartisan effort to ensure that if we do go to war again, we do it the constitutional way and we do it together. That's Pat Buchanan talking about AIPAC. Al Jazeera.info has reprinted this commentary appropriately with a very large picture of Nancy Pelosi at the top of the commentary. You can find it in today's letters and announcements to the editor of Al Jazeera.info. And when you go to that particular section of the website, you'll see exactly what I'm speaking of at this particular juncture. But there you have it. We are getting closer and closer to an expanded war in the Middle East. And once again, the Constitution of the United States has been absolutely torched by both the Republican and the Democratic parties in regard to this whole issue of war. And again, when it comes to preempting a legitimate congressional debate, when it comes to preempting the right of the American public to know who and what is behind this, when it comes to the right of the American people to have the final say through their elected representatives as to what we do or do not do in this situation, Ms. Pelosi and Mr. Bush and Mr. Cheney have been involved in a conspiracy to ensure that when it comes to Israel, there is no such debate that takes place, but that it will be business as usual in regard to a foreign lobby in a foreign country controlling the national and domestic policy of this country. It's bad news, folks, and the notion that people on the American right, allegedly on the American right, like William F. Buckley of National Review, can say that that is anti-Semitism to speak in that way, simply underscores the fact that Mr. Buckley and people of his ilk have been receiving a lot of Jewish money for a long time, and that their publications are absolutely compromised in terms of really giving the American public a bird's-eye view, not only of what's going on, but what the American right has historically stood for until the Jewish neoconservative takeover of the mainstream American right during and after the Second World War. Will the old right regain its steam? Will the old America First right regain its hold on the American conservative mind and movement? Only time will tell, but it seems to me that maybe this disastrous situation in the Middle East will provide us with the opportunity to do that. Although something that Mark Glenn said yesterday, Mark Glenn of Crescent and Cross, Mark mentioned, of course, this imagery of being in an airplane that's nosediving and being at the controls and trying to get the airplane out of the nosedive while there are yet only a handful of seconds left to do so before there's a catastrophic crash. I think that is an absolutely marvelous, brilliant, and chilling metaphor for the situation that the United States finds itself in today. Can we take back this country? Can we get our foreign policy back? Can we get our Congress back? Can we take our media back? Can we take our educational institutions back? Can we take our churches back? Can we tell the policy elite in this country with its affiliations with Zionism that we are going to take America back and that we are going to kick their fannies out of this process once and for all? It seems to me that that's ultimately the issue, but the clock is ticking, folks. I think Mark Glenn of Crescent and Cross has it exactly right. We are in a nosedive in an airplane headed straight for a cataclysmic crash and demise if there is not an amazing turnaround, if there is not a taking back of this country while there is yet time. Don't expect to find the information as to how to do it in the corporate media. Don't expect the corporate press to explain to you or to me exactly what's happening and why. Go to the good sources of information in the alternative media. That includes the Republic Broadcasting Network. That includes the American Free Press for the real story as to what's been happening in this country for many, many years and how late the hour really is. Is there any more important issue to us today? You know, we're getting ready for another baseball season. I think it's right around April 1st that baseball season begins again. Maybe it's significant that that occurs on April Fool's Day. And don't misunderstand me. Historically, I've been a very strong baseball fan. I don't follow it anymore, except maybe once in a blue moon watching a game on television. But that's a very, very rare event anymore. There are some more important issues, I think, this year than the end of spring training and who wins the World Series. And it may involve the survivability of our country. This is Mark Dankoff's America coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Gary Brummett will join us at 8 o'clock Central Standard Time to talk about surviving the Israeli attack on the USS Liberty. Stay tuned.
How are you preparing ahead for the events in the future? In the near future, we know there will be those of us that will not be able to buy or sell. Stoves and More wants to help give you the freedom from the systems of the world and from skyrocketing fuel prices. Stoves and More is a dealer for all Amish-built wood cook stoves that will give you an independence you need to cook and bake your food, dry fruits and vegetables, heat your whole house water system, and heat your home. These state-of-the-art cook stoves are nothing like Grandma's old stoves. They have large, airtight, efficient fireboxes that give you an all-night burn, easily heating up to 2,000 square feet. Whether or not you're off the grid, we have products for you from stoves to Staber washers and 12 and 24 volt refrigeration. At Stoves and More, we have the perfect products to complete your preparations. To the first 10 people who purchase a stove, we'll send a free copy of our newly released DVD, Getting Started with Wood Cook Stoves. Stoves and More offers the best selection at the lowest prices on the web, so visit us at www.stovesandmoreonline.com. That website again, stovesandmoreonline.com.
The Republic Broadcasting Network is very proud to present a new educational tool that will inform and update our listeners to the most critically important topics and issues of the day. This new 50 CD collection contains invaluable information, carefully selected from the very best shows in the RBN archives. These standard format CDs have been painstakingly edited to remove all commercials and unrelated topic content. Each CD has been divided into multiple tracks for ease of use and review in any standard CD player. Each CD targets a specific subject matter. For example, Agenda 21, vaccinations, 9/11, depleted uranium, the war in Iraq, fluoride, deception in the churches, genetically modified foods, animal RFID tags, and many more topics. We encourage you to make copies and get them out to as many people as you can. Call and order your library CDs for the price of $150, 800-724-2719, or go to the website rbnlive.com.
It's true. Gold and silver have been a source of true wealth for years. In fact, people around the world have used these metals to buy and sell goods for over 5,000 years. And gold and silver will continue to be a source of true wealth for the foreseeable future. If you look back in history, you'll see that all fiat currencies have failed to maintain wealth or failed altogether. But gold has always protected its holder, a true asset, usable to anyone around the globe. As the value of your Federal Reserve note continues to depreciate, gold will be your only insurance. As an example, in 1975, you could buy a $40,000 home with 1,000 gold coins. Today, that same house is $400,000, yet you can still buy it with 1,000 gold coins. To find out more information on how to protect your wealth, call Republic Trading at 1-800-691-7898. That's 1-800-691-7898.
San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Gary Brummett is going to be joining us at right around 8 o'clock Central Standard Time. He is a survivor of the Israeli attack on the USS Liberty on June the 8th, 1967. Gary is going to give us an eyewitness account of what really happened that fateful day, as well as to talk about his feelings and the feelings of other USS Liberty survivors regarding the burdens that they have carried around for 40 years regarding the silence of their own government in regard to what happened that day, and what they believe to be the deliberate complicity of the United States government in covering up Israel's role in being involved, not simply in an attack, but an attack that was, in the judgment of these survivors, deliberate, that was not a case of mistaken identity, as Israel has claimed all these years. This is something that if you check the archives, you can find going back quite a number of years some really interesting stories on this. The Washington Report on Middle Eastern Affairs has a 1993 piece on this entitled "The Assault on the USS Liberty Still Covered Up After 26 Years." And of course, that article was written 14 years ago. Eric Margolis has the well-respected correspondent with the Toronto Sun has a post for Lou Rockwell going back to May of 2001 entitled "The USS Liberty, America's Most Shameful Secret." That Wormia post and also the Margolis post for Lou Rockwell are a couple of good places to begin if you're not familiar with the basic facts of the USS Liberty cover-up. It's a very sordid story, and I think is particularly apropos not simply to understand what happened 40 years ago and to empathize with the incredible traumas that have been endured by those who survived that attack and their families, but to deal with the implications of what this continues to mean in regard to a Zionist-controlled media, in regard to a Zionist-controlled American government, which quite clearly, as was illustrated by Mr. Buchanan's post on Nancy Pelosi and the American Israel Political Action Committee, shows once more that when it comes to certain things, there isn't a dime's bit of difference between the Republican and Democratic parties. And I can't say that often enough on this show, that we need to be looking for deeper answers and more definitive answers, demanding them, basically, in regard to what has happened in this country. And as we talk about that a little bit before Gary Brummett comes on this morning, I wanted to draw your attention to a couple of things that are well worth your time in regard to being aware of what is going on in news media. It's important to be aware of what's going on in news media and who controls it and who funds it, simply to evaluate the information that is there and to see how in many cases it is incredibly far afield of the truth. There is a post today by a publication called The Insider, which you can find at theinsider.org, that gives us the real story on media mogul Conrad Black's trial on corruption charges. Now, if you turn to any of the editions of this week's Wall Street Journal or the Financial Times, you'll probably find some reference made to this Conrad Black trial, which has been coming up for a long time. What is consistently ignored by many of these same folks is the fact that Conrad Black is a very significant asset of the government of Israel and the Israeli intelligence community when it comes to infiltration of the Western press. As a matter of fact, the Insider story is entitled "Jewish Zionist Media Mogul Conrad Black on Trial for Corruption." And as you go bad and look at this this whole story, it talks about the opening of the Black trial, which hears claims of greed, lust for power, and $60 million in theft. And the Insider goes on to say that for all his wealth and influence, media mogul Conrad Black is little more than a common thief, except he used arcane financial documents rather than crowbars and guns to seize his loot of $60 million, according to American prosecutors. In an opening statement at Lord Black's trial on racketeering charges in Chicago, Assistant U.S. Attorney Jeffrey Kramer told a predominantly female jury that the former Telegraph owner had lied and stolen to prop up his position of international political leverage and finance, and a lifestyle of corporate planes, exotic holidays, and prime New York apartments. Bank robbers, quote, are masked and they use guns. Burglars wear dark clothing and use crowbars. These men dressed in ties and wore a suit, unquote, said Mr. Kramer, gesturing toward Lord Black and his co-defendants, Jack Maltby, Mark Kipnis, and Peter Atkinson. Quote, they do it with memos and documents and a few lies, unquote. He added, quote, you sit in a room with four men who stole $60 million, four men who betrayed the trust of thousands of ordinary shareholders, four men who decided that their multi-million-dollar salaries were not enough, unquote. In a speech illustrated with graphics showing thick wads of dollar bills winding their way through a web of companies, Mr. Kramer said Lord Black had forged a career in the 1970s and 80s as a local newspaper owner in Canada and America. But a desire for political influence led him to buy the Daily Telegraph, the Jerusalem Post, the Chicago Sun-Times, and other international publications. Mr. Kramer said, quote, Conrad Black didn't want to focus on small newspapers in places like Jamestown, North Dakota. He wanted his voice to be heard all over the world. He wanted to influence global events, unquote. The prosecutor is speaking the truth, but how in turn was handling Conrad Black? Mark Dankos, America will return. Live from San Antonio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, Gary Brummett will be with us at shortly after 8 o'clock Central Standard Time this morning. discuss surviving the USS Liberty situation and Israel's attack upon it in 1967. Stay tuned.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Available from the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Now you have the time to review every spoken word
on any RBN program
by ordering CDs of any broadcast in either standard audio or MP3 format. Audio CDs are just $10 per hour,
$15 for 2 hours,
and $7 when you order 3 or more hours. An entire month of your favorite broadcaster in MP3 format for just $20. So order right. Republic Broadcasting, 1015 South Mays, Suite 100, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. That address again is Republic Broadcasting, 1015 South Mays, Suite 100, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. Or for more information, call 1-800-724-2719.
And on the web at rbnlive.com.
Order your CDs today, because you can handle the truth.
Sit back, relax, and enjoy a vacation to the beautiful Ozark Mountains. Howard Creek Resort is nestled conveniently between the cities of Bull Shoals and Mountain Home on Bull Shoals Lake in the natural state of Arkansas. Howard Creek Resort offers easy access to excellent fishing and water recreation of all types. The excitement of nearby Branson music shows and Silver Dollar City is accented perfectly by the many attractions located here in the heart of the Ozarks. Horseback riding, water skiing, scuba diving, hiking, caves, and rock climbing are just a few of the many activities that are available to do in our area. Howard Creek Resorts offers it all. Whether you're staying for the weekend or for a month, Howard Creek Resorts is the place to be, an excellent place to stay, and a valued traditional family vacation resort. Visit our website at www.howardcreek.com or call 1-877-253-7690. Come visit us for a lifetime of memories.
Hi, Steve Shank, Fearless Task Force. Sure, you've got a mortgage and credit cards. Your debt creation is probably the smartest thing you've ever done. How would it be to find $75,000, $150,000, $200,000 or more you never knew you had? Now the task force has strategies to make these debts into virtual savings accounts. Ben Franklin said, a penny saved is a penny earned. By doing nothing more than you're doing right now, because you've used your credit, the right strategies can make the debt part of your financial life the smartest thing you've ever done. Oh, by the way, your strategies cost you nothing out of pocket. Go ahead and check out the debt elimination scams if you'd like to. You wouldn't take money from a loan shark, so you may not want to give your money to a debt shark. For an understanding of what a financial genius you truly are, call 800-409-5633. On the web, mydebtfreepath.com. 800-409-5633.
From San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network, Gary Brummett, a survivor of the Israeli attack on the USS Liberty on June the 8th, 1967, will be with us at just after 8 o'clock this morning, Central Standard Time. He will give us, Gary will, his understanding of what happened that day and what this has meant in his life and in the lives of the other survivors of that attack in the last 40 years, and what it must be like to go through something like this, and to see the packet of lies that have been routinely told in the mainstream press in regard to this situation in the last 40 years. It is a very, very interesting take on who and what it is that controls the American news media. And again, for some historical perspective on this in terms of commentary, there is the Eric Margolis piece from March of 2001 for LouRockwell.com entitled, The USS Liberty, America's Most Shameful Secret. The Washington Report on Middle Eastern Affairs has a story posted in 1993 on this entitled The Assault on the USS Liberty Still Covered Up After 26 Years. That piece for Wormia was written by another USS Liberty survivor. And, of course, some of the material from those articles might be woven into my interview with Gary Brummett this morning. But suffice it to say that before we look at those pieces before Gary comes on, I wanted to draw your attention again to Conrad Black's corruption trial up in Chicago and his involvement with a company entitled Hollinger International. The story of Conrad Black and Hollinger International is a classic example of the Zionist infiltration of the news media. It's absolutely significant that Conrad Black is directly involved with the government of Israel and the Israeli intelligence community and has been bringing the Israeli perspective into all of the publications that his Hollinger International controlled for a long time. Now we're hearing very credible charges that he may well be a crook. Looking at the information that the Insider posts today on this, Conrad Black's time is apparently running out in regard to staying free of legal prosecution and potentially conviction for a series of things that are discussed not only in the Insider today, but also in the corporate press. This situation is apparently bad enough that when the Wall Street Journal and the Financial Times start making mention of it, you can be sure that it's serious. Albeit in the corporate press, it's still something that is largely concealed that Conrad Black is so tight with the government of Israel. You will see reference made once in a while to the fact that Hollinger International was an owner of the Jerusalem Post, but the implications of that and the Zionist connections to other publications within the Hollinger orbit is something that is routinely and for obvious reasons kept out of the Financial Times and the Wall Street Journal, among others. But keep an eye on this story, because it very definitely underscores the fact that something is really wrong, not simply with Conrad Black and what was going on apparently with Hollinger International, but also the larger implications for what this means for our news media and the completely controlled character of our news media. And if you check out that in the theinsider.org and look for this story titled Jewish Zionist Media Mogul Conrad Black on Trial for Corruption, and scroll down the page, you will see some links to other stories. The British Independent has a post on the 10th of March on this trial, and that link is at the bottom of the Insider's page. And it makes reference to the fact that Barbara Amiel, who is Conrad Black's so-called high-maintenance second wife, She is someone who has had a lot of significance in the Conrad Black persona and story. Barbara Amiel was born in the East End of London in 1940, moved to Canada when she was 8. Amiel rose to prominence in Canadian and then British journalism, and here we have it, folks, becoming a right-wing columnist with Zionist views. She still writes for the Canadian magazine Maclean's. There is yet another angle on this in regard to all of the associations and money trails that lead to Conrad Black and to Hollinger International. And I suspect that there will be a lot of attempts on the part of the prosecution, and one assumes the corporate press covering this prosecution, to ensure that the totality of Mr. Black's story never gets to you and to me via the establishment media. And when you look again at the connections of Conrad Black, we see Donald Trump, Henry Kissinger, Michael Bloomberg, the late Peter Jennings, among the people that were rather chummy with Conrad Black. Why? You can draw your own conclusions as to why and what it means. And I, of course, am free to draw my own. But it's just another reminder of the level of corruption and influence that has taken place in our news media and in corporate America and in our government. And that those links to the Israeli lobby and to the Zionist community are almost inevitably involved. Before Gary Brummett comes on this morning, I did want to turn to a couple of the pages that I've made reference to that directly relate to the USS Liberty and to what happened on June the 8th, 1967. I would like to read a little bit of Eric Margolis's piece from May of 2001 It's entitled The USS Liberty, America's Most Shameful Secret. Eric wrote this story in May of 2001. It has a New York byline. Keep in mind that this was written a handful of months before 9/11. That's how long ago it was. And the story clearly has as much impact and import today as it did then. Margolis then in May of 2001 said, on the fourth day of the 1967 Arab-Israeli War, the intelligence ship USS Liberty was steaming slowly in international waters 14 miles off the Sinai Peninsula. Israeli armored forces were racing deep into Sinai in hot pursuit of the retreating Egyptian army. Liberty, a World War II freighter, had been converted into an intelligence vessel by the top-secret U.S. National Security Agency and packed with the latest signals and electronic interception equipment. The ship bristled with antennas and electronic ears, including TRISCOM, a system that delivered real-time intercepts to Washington by bouncing a stream of microwaves off the moon. Liberty had been rushed to Sinai to monitor communications of the belligerents in the Third Arab-Israeli War, Israel and her foes, Egypt, Syria, and Jordan. At 0800 hours, 8 June 1967, 8 Israeli recon flights flew over Liberty, which was flying a large American flag. At 1400 hours, which for those of you who are not familiar with military time is 2 p.m., waves of low-flying Israeli Mistari and Mirage 3 fighter bombers repeatedly attacked the American vessel with rockets, napalm, and cannon. The air attacks lasted 20 minutes, concentrating on the ship's electronic antennas and dishes. The Liberty was left to fire, listing sharply. 8 of her crew lay dead, 100 seriously wounded, including the captain, Commander William McGonigal. At 1424 hours, or 2:24 p.m., 3 Israeli torpedo boats attacked, raking the burning Liberty with 20-millimeter and 40-millimeter shells. At 1431 hours, or 2:31 p.m., an Israeli torpedo hit the Liberty midship, precisely where the signals intelligence systems were located. 25 more Americans died. Israeli gunboats circled the wounded Liberty, firing at crew member trying to fight the fires. At 1515 hours, or 3:15 p.m., their crew were ordered to abandon ship. The Israeli warships closed and poured machine gun fire into crowded life rafts, sinking 2. As American sailors were being massacred in cold blood, a rescue mission by 6th U.S. 6th Fleet carrier aircraft was mysteriously aborted on orders from the White House. An hour after the attack, Israeli warships and planes returned. Commander McGonigal gave the order, "Prepare to repel boarders." But the Israelis, probably fearful of intervention by the U.S. 6th Fleet, departed. Liberty was left shattered, but still defiant, her flag flying. The Israeli attacks killed 34 U.S. seamen and wounded 171 out of a crew of 297, the worst loss of American naval personnel from hostile action since World War II. Less than an hour after the attack, Israel told Washington its forces had committed a tragic error, quote-unquote. Later, Israel claimed it had mistaken Liberty for an ancient Egyptian horse transport. U.S. Secretary of State Dean Rusk and Joint Chiefs of Staff Head Admiral Thomas Moorer insisted the Israeli attack was deliberate and designed to sink Liberty. So did 3 CIA reports. One asserted Israel's Defense Minister General Moshe Dayan had personally ordered the attack. In contrast to American outrage over North Korea's assault on the intelligence ship Pueblo, Iraq's mistaken missile strike on the USS Stark, last fall's bombing of the USS Cole in Aden, and the recent U.S.-China air incident, the savaging of Liberty was quickly hushed up by Lyndon Johnson and Defense Secretary Robert McNamara. The White House and Congress immediately accepted Israel's explanation and let the matter drop. Israel later paid a token reparation of $6 million U.S. dollars. There were reports two Israeli pilots who had refused to attack Liberty were jailed for 18 years. Surviving Liberty crew members would not be silenced. They kept demanding an open inquiry and tried to tell their story of deliberate attack to the media. Israel's government worked behind the scenes to thwart these efforts, going so far as having American pro-Israel groups accuse Liberty's survivors of being anti-Semites and Israel haters. Major TV networks canceled interviews with the crew. A book about the Liberty by crewman James Ennis was dropped from distribution. The Israel lobby branded him an Arab propagandist. The attack on Liberty was fading into obscurity until last week, when intelligence expert James Banford came out with Body of Secrets, his latest book about the National Security Agency. In a stunning revelation, Banford writes that unknown to Israel, a U.S. Navy EC-121 intelligence aircraft was flying high overhead the Liberty and electronically recorded the attack. The U.S. aircraft crew provides evidence that the Israeli pilots knew full well that they were attacking a U.S. Navy ship flying the American flag. Why did Israel try to sink a naval vessel of its benefactor and ally? Most likely because Liberty's intercepts flatly contradicted Israel's claim, made at the war's beginning on 5 June, that Egypt had attacked Israel, and that Israel's massive air assault on three Arab nations was in retaliation. In fact, Israel began the war by a devastating Pearl Harbor-style surprise attack that caught the Arabs in bed and destroyed their entire air forces. Israel was also preparing to attack Syria to seize its strategic Golan Heights. Washington warned Israel not to invade Syria, which had remained inactive while Israel fought Egypt. Bamford says Israel's offensive against Syria was abruptly postponed when Liberty appeared off Sinai, then launched once it was knocked out of action. Israel's claim that Syria had attacked it could have been disproved by Liberty. Most significant, Liberty's intercepts may have shown that Israel seized upon sharply rising Arab-Israeli tensions in May and June of 1967 to launch a long-planned war to invade and annex the West Bank, Jerusalem, Golan, and Sinai. Far more shocking was Washington's response, writes Bamford. Despite the overwhelming evidence that Israel attacked the ship and killed American servicemen deliberately, the Johnson administration and Congress covered up the entire incident. Why? Domestic politics. Johnson, a man never noted for high moral values, preferred to cover up the attack rather than anger a key constituency and major financial backer of the Democratic Party. Congress was even less eager to touch this third rail issue. Commander McGonagall was quietly awarded the Medal of Honor for his and his men's heroism, not in the White House, as is usual, but in an obscure ceremony at the Washington Navy Yard. Crew members' graves were inscribed, "Died in the Eastern Mediterranean," as if they had been killed by disease rather than hostile action. A member of Lyndon Johnson's staff believed there was a more complex reason for the cover-up. Johnson offered Jewish liberals unconditional backing of Israel and a cover-up of the Liberty attack in exchange for the liberal toning down of their strident criticism of his policies in the then-raging Vietnam War. Israel, which claims it fought a war of self-defense in 1967 and had no prior territorial ambitions, will be much displeased by Bamford's revelations. Those who believe Israel illegally occupies the West Bank and Golan will be emboldened. Much more important, the U.S. government's long, disgraceful cover-up of the premeditated attack on Liberty has now burst into the open and demand for full-scale investigation. After 34 years, the voices of Liberty's dead and wounded seamen must finally be heard. That was May the 2nd, 2001, Eric Margolis, foreign correspondent for the Toronto Sun, issuing that report, which was reposted at lewrockwell.com. Very interesting story, and I'll look forward at the beginning of the next hour of the show to talk to Gary Brummett specifically about what he experienced that day on June the 8th, 1967, and what his take is on all of the events that surround that tragedy, not simply then, but now. It seems to me that we haven't gotten much further in our quest for some degree of understanding of what happened as it relates to the ongoing control of our news media and our political process by the usual culprits. And now that we are talking about a much wider war in the Middle East, if the forces of 40 years ago were powerful enough that they could control the chief executive of the United States and the American Defense Secretary in deliberately obscuring and burying the facts surrounding an attack upon a vessel of the United States by a foreign power, a foreign power, ironically enough, that has been bankrolled by this country for the last 60 years or more, it seems that this bears some examination in regard to what its present-day implications are. And clearly, one could make the argument on the basis of the success of Jewish neoconservatives close to George Bush and close to assets in both the Republican and the Democratic parties pushing for war in the Middle East, that these same forces have managed not only to create this new opportunity for Zionist expansion in the Middle East, but to do so with the complete complicity of the American corporate Zionist-controlled news media. It's happening again, folks, and in a much wider way, on a much wider scale, with even more heinous implications than what we're looking at in terms of what happened 40 years ago. Are we about to expand this thing to a strike on Iran? Is it going to involve the utilization of tactical nuclear weapons? Is there going to be a reinstitution of the American draft that involves commissioning thousands, potentially tens of thousands of additional American men and women into this situation in Persia? Only time will tell, but it's quite clear that the leading cheerleaders for this policy involved George Bush and Dick Cheney, apparently involved Nancy Pelosi and Hillary Clinton and John Edwards and Barack Obama, and involved the support of international media moguls like Conrad Black of Hollinger International. Mark Dankos America will return live from San Antonio, Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Stay tuned.
There is one and only one national populist news weekly, staffed by an unsurpassed team of veteran investigative journalists who have dared to rip the veil of deception from the cover-up stories promoted by the big money-controlled media monopoly.
American Free Press.
AFP's no-holds-barred journalists fearlessly seek the truth, no matter how controversial the issue. AFP publishes exciting, in-depth, uncensored news and information good patriotic Americans need to know to combat the coming police state being clamped in our republic. The American Free Press is your voice. Subscribe today and catch up on the real news. Mention RBN when you call and receive a one-year subscription plus a copy of Michael Collins Piper's latest bestseller, The High Priests of War. All that for just $49? Call AFP toll-free, 888-699-NEWS, or visit AmericanFreePress.net.
Hi, this is John Statler, and I want to tell you about a new shortwave receiver that we're really excited about. It's the Kato KA1103, and let me tell you, this radio has features and performance of receivers costing 2 to 3 times the price. Features include dual conversion phase lock loop tuner for continuous coverage of the entire shortwave band, AM, FM, and medium bands, 268 memory presets, single sideband reception with fine tuning control, signal strength, meter, battery, power indicator, DX local select, tone select, auto backlight screen, extra long telescopic antenna, line out and external line in jacks, and many other features too long to list. And when you purchase a Kato KA1103, you just don't get a radio, you get an entire radio package, including an external antenna, stereo earbuds, and an AC adapter, rechargeable batteries, and a nice carry pouch. So if you've been considering buying a shortwave receiver or would like to upgrade from your present radio, the KA1103 at just $110 plus $9 shipping is an outstanding value. Call us at 800-724-2719. 800-724-2719.
Hi, Steve Shank, Fearless Task Force. The J. Michael Stevens Group is shipping a lot of storable food. It's smart that you're getting going at your food supplies. 1 week after the report came out that the world had eaten more food than it produced last year, the country turned into a deep freeze, wiping out a huge part of the new crop. An example? In 24 hours, clementine oranges doubled in price. If you intend to start or finish your supply, call immediately. When you call, tell them how many adults and how many years of food you need. When there are shortages, missing items will be substituted, maintaining the quantity of food necessary. Money is not the problem. Availability is. Be careful. When food supplies get short, with no future, many retailers ship real trash to supply you. For safe food you can trust, call 800-409-5633. On the web, efoodsdirect.com. 800-409-5633.
The trick is to ride
America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Shortly after 8 o'clock this morning, Central Standard Time, we hope to be joined by Gary Brummett, who is a survivor of Israel's attack on the USS Liberty on June the 8th, 1967. I want to ask Gary an awful lot of things today about what he saw that day 40 years ago and all of the things that he and some of the survivors and their families have had to deal with in the last 40 years, including the complicity of Lyndon Johnson and Robert McNamara in covering up the truth of what happened in 1967 and why. And I made reference, of course, to a couple of excellent articles online that are good summaries for today's discussion. Eric Margolis's piece for the Toronto Sun, which was reproduced in Lou Rockwell on the 2nd of May, 2001, is a good place to begin. The Washington Report on Middle East Affairs in June of 1993, on page 19 of their print edition, has a story entitled, "The Assault on the USS Liberty Still Covered Up After 26 Years." That June 1993 post is by James M. Ennis, Jr. And Mr. Ennis was on the USS Liberty. He was a lieutenant on the bridge of the USS Liberty on the day of the attack. He retired from the Navy in 1978 as lieutenant commander after 27 years of enlisted and commissioned service, and wrote a book on the subject for Random House in 1980 entitled Assault on the Liberty. That, I'm sure, would make for a very, very interesting reading. That book, according to Wormia, was endorsed by Seymour Hersh, former U.S. Senator Adlai Stevenson, Jr., and several other folks, and again would add, I'm sure, a lot of data to what I'm covering for the listeners this morning. One of the fascinating things here in the piece by James Ennis is to see the role of Ted Kennedy in attempting to appear like he was involved in a deeper congressional senatorial investigation of this matter, but then to see the extent to which Kennedy's efforts began to fizzle out over time for reasons that we might surmise. But interestingly enough, when you look at this whole question in the James Ennis story of Ted Kennedy's acquiescence apparently to pressure from the Israeli lobby and doing nothing substantive about this attack, it raises a lot of interesting and fascinating points related to Michael Collins Piper's book Final Judgment. If the Israeli Mossad and David Ben-Gurion played a direct role in the assassination of John Kennedy, which is the thesis of Michael Collins Piper's book, Final Judgment, I have a review of that book on my website at markdankoff.com. It's quite interesting that the president's surviving brother, Ted Kennedy, would apparently be less than interested in getting to the bottom of what Israel did to the USS Liberty. Mark Dankoff's America will return live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We hope to be joined shortly after 8 o'clock this morning, Central Standard Time, by Gary Brummett. Stay tuned.